What's good? What's good? What's good, fans? This is your man, Cam. Thank you guys for tuning in once again to the Voice of the Fans podcast. As always, I got my man, Cleavon, coming from the Northwest. How you doing, Cleavon?
Doing all right. Trying to maintain during these crazy times. How about yourself?
Oh, man, it's same down here. It's pretty crazy out there, man. Did you come up on anything over the weekend? Were you doing your share of looting or protesting?
And by the time I got to Old Navy, they were already cleared out. Target,
oh,
too.
Man.
So, yeah, it's a little bit late.
A little late, huh? Okay. At least you didn't get pulled over by the cops, man. So, I saw a lot of crazy stuff going down in Seattle.
Yeah, I was surprised that it became one of the epicenters of the focus and movement. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, they hit Long Beach, new area, new mall down in Long Beach. They hit the promenade at Santa Monica. They was all over Hollywood. I think with people not working right now, no school is in. I think we got a few more days of this protesting. What you think?
Surprised that it carried on as long as it has, but once it did, I think it's kind of got some legs to it, and people have a little bit more focus and attention in what it is that they're doing, and they kind of see the progress that's come from it. So I can't say that it's going to, you know, end anytime soon. I think definitely there's going to be some momentum for the next couple of days at least.
All right, well, we're going to talk a little bit further about that and how that impacts the sports world, but let's tell the people what we got coming up. I want to ask you some questions about Colin Kaepernick and how he plays into the scenario. And we're talking about how the world is reacting to the death of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis, where the police officer put his knee in his back for, or knee in his neck for nearly 9 minutes. We're going to talk about how the world's reacting to that, specifically the sports world. We're going to talk about the NBA's return to Orlando, talk about some NFL rule changes, some things that we didn't follow up last week on. We're going to give you a This Day in History, and also going to review the top 10 running backs going into 2020 in the NFL. Also want to give a shout-out to our guys listening to us on Rise Radio, and however you may be listening to the show, whether it's iHeart, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, however you decide to listen to the show, whether that be Spotify. Thank you guys for tuning in. And we appreciate you guys for making our voice your choice. So, Cleavon, it is June the 3rd, 2020. It's week 91, man. It's week 91 of Voice of the Fans podcast on this particular platform, sir. So it just, time just keeps on flying, man. As we do each and every week, we look at the numbers. Who wore the number three best? Or when you think of the number three, who first come to your mind? And with it being week 91, we're going to look at the number 91 as well. So let's start with number three. When you think of number three, who wore it best? Or who first come to your mind, sir?
I think the person that first comes to mind at this point is you know, that guy from Wade County, D. Wade, wore it very well.
Okay.
Went up there very well. Who wore it the best? Some people say he's the greatest baseball player of all time, a guy named Babe Ruth.
Interesting. I thought you'd come out with Brandon Roy, former alum of the UW as yourself.
Definitely comes to mind, you know, rookie of the year, you know, six-time All-Star. Unfortunate that his career was cut short with some injuries, but he definitely comes to mind.
Okay. What about Diana Taurasi? Do you think of her when you think of number three at all? One of the top players.
Don't necessarily think of her as I'm not going to say she's not a great number three because obviously her accomplishments are extraordinary, but doesn't really come to mind right away. But now that you mention it, you know, things she's done at UConn and at Phoenix and for the Olympic team are are amazing. I think she's trying out for her fifth Olympic team, I heard. So, wow, if she makes that, that's just going to be ridiculous.
Okay, and then somebody you left off the list, man. I thought you'd start with Mr. Allen Iverson, the guy who changed the culture of in the NBA.
Now, the answer is definitely, had a significant impact on the league and how the game's played. And for that period of time in the mid to late 90s, he was everything. So the league had to kind of transform and reconfigure to his mold, and he carried it well.
Okay, well, when you think of the number 91, who do you think of, or who were best in your opinion?
Not a lot of 91s come to mind. Really, the only person that comes to mind is Kevin Green, the defensive end, pass rusher extraordinaire for the Rams, the Steelers, and a few other teams.
Backmaster, Kevin Green. Is Kevin Green not in the Hall of Fame still? Is he
He's presently not in the Hall of Fame, but his numbers are pretty gaudy.
a Hall of
I
Famer?
think he's. I don't know if he's had a Hall of Fame, if he had a Hall of Fame career. His sack numbers are, impressive. I think, top 10, top 15, somewhere in there. But I'm not necessarily sold on him having a Hall of Fame career. As you know, my criteria for the Hall is a little bit more stringent than some people.
Oh
So,
boy.
I might not be the right person to ask that question.
A lot of players are glad you don't have a vote, I tell you that. What do you think about Dennis Rodman? Is Dennis Rodman first ballot Hall of Famer, right? Oh boy, see what I'm saying?
Dennis is in there as a specialist. Dennis is in there as a specialist. I mean,
I mean,
five NBA championships. That's impressive. But he kind of just did the one thing. A tremendous rebounder and a really good defensive player. But I'm not sure if that gets you into the Hall.
I
other
mean,
people tend to disagree with me. Because
yeah,
again,
a lot of people
guys
I'm
like
sure di- a lot
guys
of
like
people
guys
sure
like
disagree with you.
guys like Tracy McGrady are in the Hall of Fame. So I mean, what am I going to say about that?
I mean, if your ring, your whole ring. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I just got to point this out, fans. Cleavon has a ring fetish, and then he said he has five of them, and he was an impactful player on all five of them. That should earn you Hall of Fame, make you Hall of Fame worthy. And then, not only to mention, he's probably arguably one of the best top three, four rebounders ever in the league. So I'm just confused by your criteria, but we're gonna move on. We'll save that one for another day. And big old Sergei Fedorov. Do you think of him when you think 91?
I do. That's right. Red Wings. He was a tremendous player. Kind of started that whole movement of Russian players coming to the NHL. So, yeah, he's definitely one of the guys you have to consider.
Yeah, I agree. Cleavon, it's been a tough week, man, for Black America, and it'd be a shame of us to try to ignore this. And I want to look at it, the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. I want to look at it kind of from a sports angle. I want to ask you about Colin Kaepernick. He took a knee during the national anthem a few years ago for the San Francisco 49ers, obviously, and was ostracized from the league for taking that knee during the national anthem. But he was trying to bring awareness to the racial inequalities in this country and police brutality that's been going on for centuries or decades, or centuries at least, and still continues to go on to this day. So I do want to ask you about Colin Kaepernick, but we're going to get that to that in a moment. I want to first ask you about Mr. Drew Brees, quarterback, NFL champion, quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, And did you happen to hear his comments today in regards when he was asked about Colin Kaepernick and about the protest that he took a few years ago? Did you happen to hear that?
I heard a little bit about it, if I could paraphrase, basically that he is not supportive of any type of protest or demonstration that he feels is defamatory towards the flag.
Yeah, that's essentially what he said. And he went on to talk about his forefathers and how they fought for this country to make it great, et cetera, et cetera. But what he failed to realize, as many privileged white folk do, is they only look at it and see it from their viewpoint, from their vantage point. They don't see the reason that he took the knee. They just see that he took the knee and said he disrespected the flag. Well, as we know, then the whole idea was hijacked from other white people who just wanted to cling on the disrespect they feel he showed to the flag. And after that, they didn't hear anything else. They didn't hear the reason why he was took the knee. And again, I'll mention he took the knee for inequalities that's shown here in America, racial inequalities, and police brutality. That didn't stop police brutality. Because just in the last couple of weeks, we see Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky, got shot 8 times as the police barged into her house after 12:30 in a.m. We see what happened to Greg Lloyd. We see videos of the cop trying to force a weapon into the hand of somebody who was on the ground being manhandled by the cops. He tried to force a weapon in the hand. The guy wouldn't take the weapon, and then he beat him up anyway. I mean, this is police officers. So we see the cop that in Atlanta, the 6 cops, black cops, by the way, that tased the college students while they were protesting, while they're trying to drive away. They got tased, and they subsequently lost their job. So we see this time and time going on, and oftentimes there's no punishment for the police brutality. Fortunately, they did just recently decide to convict the other 3 officers that was with Greg Lloyd's killer, who had the knee in the back. They decided to go ahead and punish those other guys and bring them to justice. So fortunately that has happened. But what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on the blindness, the tone deaf, the tone deafness, if that's the word, that Drew Brees experienced in his speeches today?
I think it goes right to the heart of the problem, is that a lot of people in America, you know, when they see police brutality, it's on the television, and, you know, it's in between channel surfing and, you know, kind of waiting for their other programs to come on, and it's kind of one of those things where, oh my gosh, that is so awful. I wish that didn't happen. And then they just turn the channel, and that's as far as it goes with them. It doesn't resonate, and the message gets misconstrued. They think that because someone is taking a knee, that it's indicative of all these other things. And they completely miss the point. They completely miss the boat, and because it doesn't have any direct effect upon them, it's easy to get the message confused. So Drew Brees is one of many. He's had some other comments that kind of allude to, you know, maybe his, you know, success as an NFL quarterback doesn't necessarily mean that he is, you know, for lack of a better word, pro-black or with the movement or his understanding of his peers and teammates with regards to social issues. So not overly surprised, but at the same time a little bit disappointed given the the climate of the country right now, and kind of going through two different I don't want to say catastrophes, that's not the right word, but two different dilemmas at the same time, dealing with COVID-19 as well as just the groundswell of emotion from another demonstration or example of police brutality. So I think his timing wasn't great, but again, I can't be overly surprised with what he said given his past experiences.
Okay. What do you think, and just I'm going to kind of veer away from Drew Brees a little bit, but as we see protests going on across the country in several different major cities, New York, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Minneapolis, obviously, Houston, Texas, Flint, Michigan, Seattle, Los Angeles, multiple cities here, Los Angeles. The thing I do see, I have to admit, is I do see a lot more people other than black people participating in this protest. And I'm not going to talk about the guys who's infiltrating the peaceful protest to create, to turn them into riots and trying to create all this chaos and anarchy. I'm not going to comment on those guys. But I'm just saying, in general, seeing a lot more people other than black people protesting, which makes me think that they're finally, this situation is finally being heard, is finally being seen. You have people in Paris and you have people in London protesting. I think there was a protest with over 20,000 people in Paris protesting, screaming, "I can't breathe," screaming, "No justice, no peace," which I feel was very odd. But nonetheless, I think it's carried over that far. And I will say the one silver lining, and it's hard to find one in this, is that there are other races finally participating in the pain, the hurt, the protesting, and trying to make their voices heard as well. Do you notice that? Have you seen that?
You know, especially in some of the major metropolitan cities that you aforementioned, I definitely saw that. I think that I wasn't surprised that perhaps the energy came from people that were a little bit younger, kind of college kids to, mid-20s. But it was surprising to me that it was a little lighter than anticipated. Some of the demonstrations that I saw, for example, here in the Seattle area, there's a suburb of Seattle called Bellevue. It's a little bit more affluent community. I was quite shocked that they had kind of taken over that area. I mean, this is the area that, guys like Bill Gates and, Kemper Freeman and, some of the, captains of industry live in. To bring it to their doorstep was kind of, it definitely took a focused energy and agenda. So I've been surprised to see that it's not just not just black folks out there, and it's more of a, us and a little bit more of a united front as opposed to just, black people marching for, their own issues. The other people understand that it's bigger than that, and that's definitely refreshing, and hopefully that leads to change.
Yeah, hopefully that does. Unfortunately, somebody who doesn't recognize the need for change or recognize that there's an issue is Mr. Vic Fangio, the Denver Broncos head coach. Did you happen to hear his comments when he says he doesn't see racism in the NFL, amongst other things?
I did see those comments. I from one perspective, I kind of see where he was trying to go with that. But at the same time, given the climate of the country and kind of what's going on, I think the comments were very naive and misguided. You need to look no further than the NFL MVP, who was told by, you know, Bill Polian and amongst others that, you know, the best thing for him would be to change positions and become a wide receiver. It's been said by commentators watching his games that the reason that the play action works so well with him is because the color of his hand blends with the ball and they just can't see it.
I mean, that was ridiculous. I mean, come on.
Yeah. You know, so when you're in a league where things like that transpire and they're constantly trying to tweak the Rooney rule so that certain disadvantages, you know, somehow get rectified, it's just very naive to think that that doesn't go on. I think perhaps what he was trying to say is that it's a work environment wherein, you know, the best player has a chance to succeed, you know, no matter what race, creed, or color, in that everyone has to work together for a common good type of thing. But when you say that there's no racism, or I don't see racism within the NFL, it's a very narrow focus if you don't see it.
Yeah, that's a very narrow focus, as you mentioned, and that's being blind and tone deaf. Because if he doesn't see it, he's closing his eyes to the issue. How did you get your job as a head coach? How many black head coaches are there in a league that's predominantly 70% black? How many GMs are there? I mean, with the historically, one of the better GMs in the game before he retired was the GM for the Baltimore Ravens, who was who was as well a Hall of Fame tight end. So if one can do it, why can't there's others that can do the job? Is the first place I go. But with him not being in his role, retiring, are there any black GMs? Or there's one down in South Florida, but their production is yet to be seen, so I'm not even going to touch on that. By the way, totally off script, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mr. Flores, had a wonderful statement about the George Floyd, the protesting, the acknowledgement that there's a problem in the country, an absolutely outstanding statement. And I encourage everybody to, on Twitter, follow my Twitter, What's Good in Sports. I know I retweeted it, but go look for it yourself. Absolutely outstanding statement where he said, he doesn't hear a lot of people who spoke up against Colin Kaepernick. And as we talked about, the what they call the disrespect for the flag, but they totally ignored the reason that he was kneeling. They spoke up loudly about the disrespect of the flag, but nobody spoke up about the reason. And again, as we see the issues continue to fester in this country, nobody has that same energy who is speaking about the disrespect for the flag, that supposed disrespect for the flag. Nobody had the same energy to talk about the problem, the reason he needed to kneel. So that was an absolutely wonderful statement that he had. I don't know if you saw that, but just to kind of touch base a little bit and kind of balance this out, because Fangio says there's no racism in the NFL. Well, that kind of solidified this racism going on in this country. Thank you for your feedback, Cleavon. We would do our fans a disservice if we totally ignored that issue. We wanted to tackle it from a sports angle. I think these two incidents or three incidents that I brought up kind of allowed us to slip this into our show. So thank you, fans, for tuning in. Thank you, Cleavon, for your participation. And on that note, I got one more question for you and see what your thought is. We mentioned Colin Kaepernick, his protests from a few years ago. The NFL sent out a a note, a message to the public, all but agreeing that there is a problem, a systemic problem in America, and that they should do something about it, encouraging others to acknowledge the problem and that they should do something about it. Essentially agreeing with Colin Kaepernick that there was an issue. We heard the article coming from the gentleman who was a member of the NFL and now he's a writer. He wrote the article saying that the reason Colin Kaepernick was not allowed on team because they thought the team was going to lose 20% of their profit by signing Colin Kaepernick. So, well, I say all that to ask you this. Should, in light of the current situation, in light of the memo that the NFL sent out, the press release that the NFL sent out, all but agreeing with the stance that Colin Kaepernick took years ago, should Colin Kaepernick be welcomed to an NFL training camp? Not given a position, not signed to a contract, but should he be welcomed to an NFL training camp? Trials for give a legitimate trials for a team. Your thoughts?
He definitely should be welcomed from the perspective that his presence shouldn't be seen as divisive and toxic to the situation as it was before. It's very ironic. It's kind of sad because Colin Kaepernick was at the forefront of all this and kind of foreshadowed what was to come. As we see, it's crazy to see that after the George Floyd incident and the riots that ensued, what people in power are asking is for the protesters to demonstrate peacefully to try and shed light on the situation of police brutality. And the preferred method, ironically, is the taking a knee like Colin Kaepernick did. But 4 years ago, he was anti-military, he was anti-patriotic, he was against the flag. No one wanted anything to do with him. We see it 4 years later, once the powder keg is kind of lit, that is exactly what he was trying to do with his platform, and what better place to do it than on Sundays watching the NFL. It's not a lot of things that you can do that can get more attention than an NFL football game. As we all know, the top 10 watch shows of all time in the history of television are Super Bowls. So when he was using his platform to do that, they didn't like it. But once things get a little bit crazy and the things that he was originally trying to bring attention to have, come to a head, then all of a sudden that looks like, oh, that's now they kind of see what he was trying to say and what he was trying to do. But after they ruined his career and sullied his name, and I wonder if all those stores in Denver that decided they didn't want to sell Nikes anymore because Colin Kaepernick was one of their sponsors, how they feel when they see the effect of the looting and rioting on their stores. They feel the same way.
Great point. I was convinced of this. My initial response was absolutely not. But I was convinced by somebody that Colin Kaepernick being welcomed to training camp, any training camp across the country, will be a tremendous sign that the NFL finally gets it. And it wouldn't be, you can't apologize, but it would be them kind of mending fences, if you will. And whether he got the job or not, that's another thing to be discussed. But him being welcomed to a training camp, I think, would be a good thing for the NFL. Because, as you mentioned, he was at the forefront of this. I'm not going to give him the credit for foreshadowing this, because this has been going on for decades and decades and decades. It just hasn't stopped. And he tried to bring awareness to the situation. Kudos to him. But I can't give him credit for kind of foreshadowing this, because it's not like this came out of nowhere. I mean, it's been something that's just been a continuous issue. But his name is prevalent in the sense that he was ostracized for doing that. And kudos for him stepping out on the limb. If he wanted to come back and kind of give it a legitimate try, we know that try in Atlanta wasn't the most, I would say, honorable way tryout that they had for him. But coming back to training camp, I'd like to see it. So let's spin away from that, Cleveland. Let's get into some actual sports topics as best we can. And I want your feedback on the incident with Henry Ruggs, the Raiders receiver, kind of that scenario, if you heard about him getting injured, moving, his pop said. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that the fact that this is even a story goes kind of to the thought that I've had for quite some time, is that we as fans sometimes tend to want to put athletes in this plastic bubble and just unwrap them when it's game day, and only when it's, their record is, reflective of, something that they can go forward with in the playoffs, and if, your team's not doing well and you got a really good player, let's put him on a shelf so we don't get him hurt, and, let's not risk injury and that kind of thing. And, life happens. I mean, the last couple of months, if anything else, is that some things are just simply out of your control and you can't control everything. Somebody getting hurt moving somebody else in, and I'm not convinced this is going to be something serious. It's going to keep him out of training camp or anything, but it happens. You just got to let that roll off your shoulder a little bit.
Well, that's a great point. Life does happen, and I thought the description of kind of how things happened and what actually happened was kind of hilarious to read. I don't know if you caught that, but just the way it was worded, what I thought was absolutely hysterical. When his father says, nothing serious, just an open wound on the leg. Something actually almost went through his leg, but it was nothing serious. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you're pricking your muscles and pricking your bones, and you have an open incision on your leg, that's pretty serious. And come to find out that he was a couple inches away from hitting the artery, it was actually pretty serious. I just thought the description of what happened was rather hysterical. So we talked about the onside kick rule changes a little bit last week, but there's been some more that's been announced since then. What do you think about the NFL having an eye in the sky to overlook reviews and try to be the somebody in the sky, or being the final say on the review of the play? What's your thoughts on that? And I'll give you my thoughts.
The opportunity to use technology to overturn missed calls is always a good thing. It just depends on how it is that you use it and how it's implemented. Just because you have the technology doesn't mean that you use it the right way. So I guess we'll have to see how it works in practical terms. But, anything that, makes it easier for referees to make calls or, right some wrongs, I'm a fan of.
Cleveland, I've had this thought for years now, that with all the people on each side of the stadium, each side of the sideline, all the people that an NFL team brings to a stadium, all the people that a visiting team brings to the stadium, there should be three representatives in watching the game from the TV aspect up in the booth. One rep from the team, one rep from each team, and a lead official. The plays, anybody, the way we see the game at home, anybody can make a legitimate call pretty quickly. I mean, they give us the replays, two or three different angles, within 90 seconds of a play happening, sometimes sooner than that. These representatives, whether it be league officials, whether I think it should be one representative from each team and then one league official that says, was that a catch? No, it wasn't a catch. Oftentimes one team's going to say, yes, it was a catch. The other team's going to say, no, it wasn't a catch. And he has the official to decide it. But both teams have a voice in it. Was it a fumble? No, it wasn't a fumble. Again, both teams have a voice in that outcome. If they're honest, they can often decide that play in split seconds. No reason for the ref to go to the booth because the guys are up top already looking at it. Hit the button, boom, it was a catch. Buzzer goes off to the official, boom, that was a catch. Buzzer goes off to the official, it was a fumble. The holding calls, the pass interference calls, I don't know that those should be reviewed. I think more training should go into with the officials. I think they should be on officials should be full-time officials. So they study this more in depth. They can easily call pass interference call versus a holding call versus a helmet-to-helmet play because they've studied this. They're studying it now during the offseason. But when the season come on, they're fully prepared to call pass interference, holding, what have you. That's a simple solution. That's a very simple solution. We don't need extra replay. We don't need more technology. Have three guys in a room watching the game on TV. Sound off, just watching the game. And when it comes to them, guys, what do you see? Or they see something, they can hit the buzzer. I think that will solve a lot. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's kind of oversimplifying the matter. I think that's kind of what they were trying to do with sending everything to New York.
Why go to New York with the replay
booths? Because they have more camera angles and they have more. That's what they're doing. That's what their focal point is. They're watching the game from that perspective. So I mean, you know, the representative from each team. I'm not quite sure what that does because obviously they have their own interests at heart. So they're going to see it from their perspective. So that's a little different. It should be some impartial people that don't have any sets and interest in the outcome of the game. So, you know, a team representative seems a little weird, a lot. But at the same time, I understand what you're saying, that if that's all that you're doing is watching the game from certain angles, that you should be able to do that. But we've seen that implementation of these things, it's easier said than done, and that you don't always get the desired results. So that is Sky thing. Hey, man, let's try it, see what we can come up with. The other way didn't work out so well, and it causes a lot of delays in the game, kind of slows down the flow. So anything that can kind of rectify that situation, I'm all for it.
Okay. In terms of onside kicking, do you prefer, what's your thoughts on the 4th and 15, the one untimed down 4th and 15 from the opponent's 25-yard line? What's your thoughts on that versus the onside kick? They get one play from the 25-yard line, 4th and 15. If they convert, they get the ball. You know, if they convert from the 25-yard line, if they, you know, 17-yard play, they get the ball at the 42, going the other way. If they miss it, if they don't convert and they pick up 12 yards, say, they get the ball, the opposing team gets the ball at the 37 going in. What's your thoughts?
I'm not a big fan of that one. It makes the game a little bit too flukish. I mean, flukish things can happen there. 15 yards for some. 15 yards for some teams is way more doable than other teams, and I would hate to lose that way. Let me just put it that way. Just giving a team the opportunity to convert on 4th and 15 as opposed to, you got to kick the ball. You're supposed to be kicking off anyways, right? And the onside kick is just, okay, well, you can just kind of squib kick it and see if you can get it back, but chances of that are highly unlikely. Chances of you converting 4th and 15 are way higher than you getting an onside kick back.
Okay. All right. That's a good analytical way to look at it. But if they're trying to do it with the onside kick for safety purposes, the injury aspect of it, I mean, I think the you're right where they say the onside kick percentage is somewhere in between the 12% and 15%. But you're right. There's a much better chance of you getting 4th and 15 than an onside kick. I certainly agree with you there. And then if you have Patrick Mahomes who scores a touchdown, they kick the field goal, then they come back and go 4th and 15 on you converted, and then they're driving again. Like they can kill the game real quickly if that's the scenario. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Okay. What about? I'm sure you remember years ago playing against the Cincinnati Bengals. I'll never forget this game when Chuck Knox had all his defensive linemen, you know, fake the injury to slow down the Cincinnati Bengals, who and Boomer Esiason, who ran that no huddle offense, the quick strike offense. I remember that specifically, way early or late 80s. But the strategy have Jacob Green, Joe Nash fake the injury so the clock is stopped. And they have time to get their defense on the field. Defense gets set. They give them, you know, another 30 seconds to get a blow. But Cincinnati was up in arms because they're like, look, these guys are hurt. They go to the sideline. They come right back in the next play. What's your thoughts on they're trying to create a rule to have prevent teams from manipulating the game clock by committing multiple fouls? And I think we saw it when Tennessee played the Patriots, where Bill Belichick had the guys jump off sides a couple times in a row to stop the clock from running. And in turn, Vrabel didn't decline the penalty because they knew what they were doing. It was kind of a weird scenario. So what's your thoughts on that?
I think it's gamesmanship. I definitely remember when the Seahawks did it. They all did it with straight faces. The way they portray their injuries, and you know, it was real catastrophic when it happened, and then like you said, two plays later they're back down at full speed, you know, like nothing ever happened. It happens with all up tempo offenses. It happened with the Cincinnati Bengals, and it happened with the Buffalo Bills. They had teams that were trying to do that as well. Any team that can score points in bunches. They try and figure out a way to slow them down by any means necessary. And in this particular day and age, you know, the packages are so much more important. You know, you just don't have players on the field that, you know, play all three downs. So it's important to kind of get that the right matchup for what it is that you're trying to do. So there's always going to be things that teams try and do to gain an advantage or get the best situation, the best personnel in the game for that situation in. So, I mean, I think you can try and come up with as many rules as you want, but they got to come up with something to kind of slow things down if the tempo is the issue. You probably see a lot of that with you know, teams playing Arizona coming up in the next couple of years.
Yeah, like you say, it's gamesmanship, but they need to – I don't know that you can kind of eliminate that gamesmanship from the game. So that's part of it. Cleavon, thank you for the conversation, man. We went way long on this segment. So let's take a little break here. We're going to come back and talk about some NBA topics. What's good? What's good, fans? Thank you guys for tuning in once again. This is the Voice of the Fans podcast, so appreciate your participation. Cleavon, NBA looks like they're going to be starting up late July in Orlando in the bubble. But they can't, they haven't decided exactly how they're going to, if they're going to play out the rest of the season, how many teams will be out there. We've heard 20, we've heard 22. I've heard 8 games, I've heard 10 games. We all agree that they need some time to kind of warm up and get in a game shape before they rush right into the playoffs. But my question for you is, by going 20 teams or 22 teams, that opens the door for Dame Lillard or Zion Williamson to kind of get in the playoffs and draw more eyes from fans and get different markets involved in the playoffs and the rest of the NBA season. As a basketball fan, do you care to see Zion Williams or Damian Lillard get a shot at the playoffs, considering, you know, their performance throughout the rest of the season or most of the season that was cut short? Do you care to see them?
You know, ordinarily I wouldn't, but this is such a unique situation with regards to COVID and coronavirus and just the shortened amount of time that you're going to have to kind of bring everything together. Sure, why not add a little bit more excitement and more intrigue and more opportunity for a few big-name players to kind of make the playoffs where ordinarily they would have no chance to do so whatsoever. And a lot of those smaller market teams that are taking a bigger hit than some of the larger market teams without having these games and not having that revenue generated. So if you give those teams an opportunity to get into it and those players that, you know, have a certain level of, you know, fanfare, then I'm okay with it.
Okay. I can go either way. I understand why they're doing it, but I can go either way. I understand this is a different set of circumstances that they're playing with. They're trying to recoup some fans and give back to the fans of New Orleans who had a young, promising team, give back to the city of Portland because they were out of the playoffs. So just them missing the playoffs is no big deal to me. But I understand that how they're trying to keep interest in a lot of different markets. So I'm kind of indifferent on that. What do you think about the bubble? Do you think the bubble is going to work for the NBA? Do you think they're going to apparently have testing every day for these players? So they're not playing, you know, because they're going to have to be touching and sweating and coughing and breathing on each other. They're going to have to be healthy out there. And so they're going to have continuous testing to make sure that the players who are playing are not COVID positive. So what's your thoughts on that?
I think that as you're saying it, you're starting to kind of hear how unrealistic that sounds in regards to it, just the whole idea of what it is that they're doing, right? So if their idea is that they're going to play NBA games and no one is going to get infected with COVID coronavirus, I think that's an extremely unrealistic expectation. Some players are going to get it. It's going to get passed around. Now the question is it going to get spread through the entire league like the plague, like your worst case scenario? I think that the fact that they're testing everyone every day goes a long way towards kind of mitigating that. But at the same time, to think that no one is going to get it is not going to happen. Players are going to get it. Team personnel is going to get it. It's just a matter of containing it so that it just doesn't get widespread throughout it. So I think that testing every day is the best that you can do, is the most preventative thing that you can do for that to happen. But we're going to see it. And it's just going to be a matter of, A, how quickly the players bounce back, and B, what type of fear factor it puts in the rest of the league. But I'm hoping at least that these
Okay,
guys are
so
not going into this thinking that no one is going to get the coronavirus playing like games.
since you brought it up, and I don't want to single out, and I don't wish ill upon any player, obviously, but in the instance that LeBron James comes down with coronavirus while they're out there in a bubble, do you shut the league down, or do you continue to play? The Lakers continue to play their playoff series without LeBron. Well, how would you handle that scenario?
You have to continue to play. You have to treat it like it, as if it was an injury, as if it was something that, they can come back from at a later time. I mean,
Okay.
it depends on when and when it happens. I mean, obviously, the later it happens, the more, severe it is to the, chances of the Lakers, winning a championship. But at the same time, yeah, you have to treat it like it's an illness or an injury.
I would hate for you guys to have that excuse. I'll just leave that right there. Kind of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote an article, op-ed in the LA Times. I think it was Sunday evening, Sunday morning, in regards to the George Floyd situation, in regards to police brutality. Did you happen to catch his article?
I caught a little. I caught excerpts of it on the internet.
One of the lines he had in the article is, "You start to wonder if it should be all black people who wear body cams, not the cops, so they can prove there'd be more video of what's actually going on to black people that, white America is just finding out about." I thought it was a wonderful article. Steven, as you know, I like to write. What's Good in Sports is my website. I got an article. For the last 2 years, I got a dozen or a whole bunch of articles that I write just on sports, on positive sports. But this article was so eloquently written that it made me not want to write. I didn't write that day. I didn't write that day. I had to write to get an article submitted for this weekend of publication. But I didn't write that day because that article was so eloquently written, and it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, his op-ed in the LA Times. You can find it talking about the protests and how black people are pushed to the edge with this continuous police brutality that we've discussed earlier. So I encourage you and the fans to take a chance to go read that article if you can. Cleveland, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about this day in history or this week in history and some random sports topics. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. This is Cam, Voice of the Fans. Let's take a break.
Hey fans, one thank you guys for tuning into our Voice of the Fans podcast as you do each and every week. We appreciate the love. Please make sure to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about our show. Additionally, I'd like to ask that you guys subscribe to our Voice of the Fans YouTube page. Go to YouTube, type in Voice of the Fans, hit the subscribe button. What you're going to find there is a lot of exclusive content. Interviews between Greg Popovich and myself, Scott Farrell, sports talk host, and myself. You're going to hear my conversation with Emmitt Smith. Hear why he tells me to go do some research. You're also going to see my interview with Jim Brown, legendary Jim Brown. You're going to see my interviews with Eric Dickerson. You're going to see my interview with Terrell Davis. Hear why Terrell Davis says that Broncos running system was not a system. Hear his explanation of that. Once again, Voice of the Fans on YouTube page. Check it out. Again, tell a friend to tell a friend because we appreciate that love. Thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, thank you for making our voice your choice.
All right, Cleveland, thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, Voice of the Fans. Let's talk about this day in history. Unique day. in history, Mr. Cleavon. A lot of things happening. Harriet Tubman. You know, you're familiar with Harriet Tubman, right?
I am familiar with Harriet Tubman.
Led Union Army guerrillas into Maryland, freeing over 700 slaves on this day back in 1863. Maybe 1863, I think it was. On this day, 6-2, that Harriet Tubman issue was 6-2. Happened yesterday in 1990. Randy Johnson achieved the first no-hitter for your Seattle Mariners.
Big unit.
The big unit does the thing. On this day, 2003, hit king or home run king Sammy Sosa hit a ground ball, hit a ground out against the Tampa Bay Rays, and the bat broke. What was inside the bat? We've seen the cork inside the bat. So do you think Sammy Sosa had a cork bat for all those home runs he hit?
For all of them, Cam? No. For quite a few of them, absolutely.
Okay. Man, this is a busy week here in history. On this day, 6-6 in 1966, Stokely Carmichael launched Black Power Movement. As you know, back in the mid-60s, that turned into the Black Panthers. And then on this day, just a few short years ago, the greatest of all time was called home, and that's Muhammad Ali passed away. So pretty busy time of the year right now this weekend. So, Cleveland, we talked about Sammy Sosa, talked about the big unit. We don't often talk baseball on the show. But I'm one of those fans who, when baseball went on strike and, you know, I would watch the All-Star game, I would watch the World Series, just wouldn't watch all the games. I mean, growing up in Seattle, the Mariners stunk out loud, so there was zero interest in baseball for me. But I was one of the fans that in 1994, when they went on strike and they didn't have a World Series, I was done. I stopped watching any All-Star games. I stopped watching any World Series. I probably watched 3-6 innings of a World Series game since the mid-90s. So I want to ask you, do you care to see baseball? Do you care to see a baseball season this year? Whether it's 50 games, 82 games, or 100 games, do you care to see a baseball season this year?
I wouldn't say that I have gotten to the point where I'm completely, totally indifferent as to whether they play a baseball season or not. Yeah, I would like to see a baseball season. I still enjoy watching the game. Again, you know, certain aspects of it are much different than they have been in the past. And, you know, the focal point on, you know, just how many home runs you can hit is, you know, a little bit different, and how the game is played strategically and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it's a major sport in the United States. I mean, it's still one of the top three. So absolutely, I would like to see a season. I think a 50-game season is a little bit, you know, for lack of a better word, a little bit too much of a microwave kind of, you know, cram it all in. I think you have to play at least 80 games. I mean, you know, for example, you only have a 50-game season. I mean, you know, someone like a Clayton Kershaw only gets like 10 starts. I mean, it's kind of weird, right? So it's like, are you really going to condense all that into just, you know, 50 games and then the playoffs and the World Series right after that? Seems a little difficult to do. And if you're doing that, I don't see how you have any minor leagues at all, because, I mean, how quickly can you really call players up? But at the same time, if you're only playing 50 games, I mean, players probably overexerting themselves would lead to more injuries. So
you would kind of need that backup. So I think it's kind of hard, you know, logistically to have a season that short. But, yeah, I'd like to see baseball come back, at least for a little bit.
Okay, well, that makes one of us. From my understanding, minor leagues are all but going away. I don't know what they're going to do in the interim, but just from what I'm hearing and some of the sound, it's like minor league is in deep jeopardy. But Cleveland, as we've been doing this list the last couple of weeks, we got a real good list coming up tonight. The top 10 running backs in the NFL to watch this upcoming season. Looking at your list, man.
Impressive, isn't it?
A little concerned about
it. It's impressive, isn't it?
First of all, you have Christian McCaffrey. And 3 years later, he's now the number one back in the league. That's how you have him?
Christian Jackson McCaffrey.
My, how quickly we are things change. Because I'm not going to tell the fans. You can tell the fans where you had him ranked coming into the NFL.
You know, Cam, sometimes you, on this show, you tend to live in the past a little bit. You need to, you know, stay present and future tense thinking. You know what I'm saying? We need to go back all the way to Christian McCaffrey's senior, you know, year at Stanford and try and, you know, project what he was going to be from there on. Let's just deal with 2020 and go from there. Do that.
Oh, I guess you didn't have him ranked very high in your list of running backs, did you? I guess if we did this list a couple seasons ago, McCaffrey wouldn't even make the top 10. That's what it sounded like.
It's water under the bridge, Cam. It's water under the bridge. We're talking about 2020 going forward.
Okay. All right. So you have McCaffrey at number one. Saquon Barkley. Alvin Kamara at number three.
I actually have Derrick Henry at number three and Alvin Kamara at number four.
Okay. Well, I have Henry number one. I mean, who wants to tackle that guy? Led the league in rushing last season. I mean, just a complete monster. Nobody wants to tackle that guy. And he essentially carried the team to the AFC Championship last season. I do have McCaffrey with his production coming out of the backfield, catching, running, receiving at number two. I have Ezekiel Elliott at number three.
Okay.
So I have Saquon Barkley after Elliott. I have Nick Chubb, who was actually, I think, third in rushing last season, kind of surprisingly. You want to tell the people why you have Saquon Barkley ahead of Elliott?
Sure, I think he's the next most complete running back in the NFL. And if Christian's not careful, he can very, very easily become the best running back in the league. I think his durability, I think his versatility, and just the power with which he runs with definitely makes him in the top two running backs in the league.
Okay, outside of Alvin Kamara's versatility, catching and receiving, why do you have him rated so high? Because he did kind of have a junior slump, if not a rookie slump, right? Or a sophomore slump.
I think he was battling some nagging injuries that happen sometimes from the running back position, and I think that they were kind of adjusting to the absence of Mark Ingram. You know, to be perfectly honest, I think that they missed his presence a little bit more than they had anticipated. You know, Mark Ingram kind of taking a few of those carries, maybe a few of those, you know, goal line, you know, attempts. So I think that they'll make the adjustment and Alvin Kamara will be just fine, especially in that offense where they feature him.
Okay. And you had him behind, you have Alvin Kamara ahead of Ezekiel Elliott?
Just the one spot, bro. Yeah. Just the one spot.
Was that based on production? That couldn't have been based on production. Just what was that exactly the base on? He's a better receiver out the backfield?
He is a little bit more of a versatile back. I think that they use him in their offense a little bit more efficiently than the Cowboys use Ezekiel Elliott. It's kind of an all or nothing kind of a situation over there with him. And, you know, when he's doing his thing, Dak plays well in a lot of, you know, play action off of a run. But I just don't feel that the previous regime, and maybe I should have given him the nod over Alvin, given the new, offensive coordinators that are coming in, and the philosophy of McCarthy. Maybe they can use him a little bit better than, Jason Garrett was able to. But I don't think 5 is bad. I mean, 4-5, I wouldn't be too upset if, you flip-flop those two positions.
Okay. So we have a lot of the same players, Le'Veon Bell, Dalvin Cook, well, a couple of the same players, I should say. You have Nick Chubb. You have him barely breaking into your top 10. What's up with that? He was, like I said, I think he was number 3. I'm almost certain he was number 3 in rushing last year.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. You heard the other running backs that were in front of him. I don't really, feel that any of those players that were aforementioned are below him. So, I think he's tagged right where he should be.
Well, I have Nick Chubb, as I stated, number 6, ahead of Kamara, ahead of Dalvin Cook. I love Dalvin Cook.
Clearly you don't, because you have Nick Chubb ahead of him. That's okay.
Well, there's some injury issues with Dalvin Cook. I mean, he's been injured last couple of seasons.
Not last year.
He did get hurt towards the end of the season.
Okay.
Somebody on my list that you don't have on, there's a couple players on my list. Mixon, Cincinnati Bengals, all-purpose running back. I actually have him ahead of Le'Veon Bell. You got Le'Veon Bell at 6. Behind Ezekiel Elliott, in front of Dalvin Cook, Josh Jacobs. I'm not sure Josh Jacobs. I like Josh Jacobs a lot. I'm surprised you have two Alabama running backs on your list, considering what you think of the
Clemson. That is kind of funny. That kudos to you for pointing that out. I hadn't really thought of it that way. But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. Because of those other 17 that didn't pan out. We'll see.
Look at you. I have Mixon on you. Are you not a fan of Mixon? Are you not familiar with what Mixon brings to the game?
No, I'm quite familiar with Mixon's work. He's all right, man. We'll see if he can take that next step, man.
Okay.
He always seems to start. He's a start stop guy to me.
Okay.
Kind of a Marlon Mack kind of guy. Are you good or you're not good? Make up your mind.
I think his production is a little bit better than Marlon Mack, although Mike's had an excellent season now last year. You have Melvin Gordon on your list. I mean, I think that's a little high, number 10 in the league going into the season. Like, he's going to be sharing carries with Lindsay in Denver. So I was kind of surprised to see that. Aaron Jones, on the other hand, is going to be getting the bulk of the carries. So why Melvin Gordon over Aaron Jones? You want to explain that?
I think he's got something to prove. He'll have a training camp under his belt. I think that he was disappointing with the way contract negotiations went in Los Angeles and how ultimately he ended up kind of being the odd man out in that equation. So I think given the opportunity, I think he'll be just fine to kind of break out and show who Melvin Gordon is.
Okay. So, fans, we're going to break out a new segment in the show. The segment is Clamp Cleavon. Mr. Cleavon, in terms of the running backs, their production in 2019, there are 4 running backs that was not on either one of our lists that are in the top 6 yards per carry. Can you name the four running backs that are in the top 6 yards per carry in the year 2019?
I can do that for you, Cam.
Let's see here as I go down my my list here. I'm going to say one of them has to be Chris Carson.
Chris Carson is not on those lists. Chris Carson gained 1,000 yards. I was a little impressed trying to come up with this list. But Chris Carson is not on this list.
Chris Carson's not on that list.
Four running backs who's not on either one of our top 10 running back lists who are in the top six yards per carry in 2019. Chris Carson is not one of them.
What about my man Eagle Perry up there in Buffalo?
Ding, ding, ding. Singletary is number five. 5.1 yards a carry.
Okay, I'm getting the hang of this game here a little bit. We'll go to
1 particular guy. Help you out. One particular guy. Actually,
my guy. He's not my guy, but we got to go Mostert, right? Out there in the Niners?
Mostert is number two on the list. 5.6 yards a carry.
Yeah. Mostert's what's the average. Okay. So I got two. I got two. Okay.
Two of the four, yeah.
Over the Terminator.
Who?
Connor, man. Is Connor on there?
No. No, two strikes. You got one more strike.
Okay. Let's get real.
One of the guys actually was, I'll help you out. One of the guys was a teammate of Mostert, oddly enough.
So we're going to go Burrito with one of those.
Burrito is number six, 5.1 yards a carry. The now Miami Dolphin, Matt Breida. So there's one more guy. I know you're familiar with this gentleman's work. He's on a team. He's on a team. Actually, this is odd. Well, I can't. I'll be giving it away if I give you this clue.
Don't give it away. Cause I only got one.
And I only got one left.
I know I'm gonna get it.
If I had the Alistair Beck theme music, I'd be playing it right now.
I know it. Let me. It's right in front of my face. I can just see it. Patrick Lindsay.
Who's that?
Patrick Lindsay.
No, it wasn't. So the clue I was going to give you is he's on a teammate with the gentleman who led the league in yards per carry. He's in the same backfield as the gentleman who led the league in yards per carry in 2019. You know who led the league in yards per carry, right?
So you're going to go Kareem Hunt on me? Is that where you're going?
Lamar Jackson led the league in yards per carry at 6.9.
Oh, is it really Mark Ingram? I was thinking maybe.
No, Mark Ingram actually he's number eight. He's tied for eight at number five. Nick Chubb again is 5 yards a carry. Gained just 1,500 yards a season, 1,500 yards rushing last season, just under that. Gus Edwards, 5.3
Gus
yards.
Gus Edwards, wow. Yeah, I wasn't going to get that.
Gus Edwards. So that's a
That's a new segment here, fans.
I like this one. I like this segment, fans, because it ain't going to happen too often. He's going to try and throw some curveballs, but, man, I'm too good at this.
Well, so far, Cleveland's 0-1. All the bluster. He's 0-1.
I got three of the four you were talking about. Come on. I wasn't going to get Gus Edwards. I mean, damn. Let's be honest. That's kind of off the radar a little bit.
Okay. Well, he was the number three guy rushing last year. So I mean, come on. I can't help you with that. So fans,
I mean, that's like saying Ryan Tannehill, was the number four in completion. I mean, that might be off your radar a little bit. You might not have been expecting that kind of thing.
Ryan Tannehill. Was in just looking at some numbers last night. Ryan Tannehill led the league in quarterback passer rating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah, throw that one out to somebody. Cleavon, again, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your participation. I'm going to leave the fans with this in their mind. Basketball is looking at coming back with no fans, as baseball will, and it's just in interestingly enough, I had this quote for Kobe Bryant. I draw from the crowd a lot. If he does, I'm sure other players do. So it's going to be interesting to see how the other players react to hearing sneakers and coaches during a live basketball game.
Yeah, that will be a definite added component of the game.
Yeah. So, fans, thank you guys again for tuning in. Please be sure to tell a friend about the Voice of the Fans podcast. Also, however you choose to listen, please rate and review our podcast, whether it's iHeartRadio, Tuned In, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Please rate our show. And as always, want to thank you guys for tuning in and making our voice your choice.
Hey, Marcellus Wiley right here. Thank you for making our voice your choice. You know what I'm saying? Let me give me a beat, dog. Let me get something.